Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Commitment to Courage, the show that inspires you to choose a life of victory. Call in at 347-637-2274. Now here is your host, the woman you've been hearing about, Pauline Victoria.
Welcome to Commitment to Courage. This is your host, Pauline Victoria, and I'm so excited to be here today in beautiful Hawaii and being able to speak with each and one of you through this radio show, Commitment to Courage. I wanted to first of all start with by apologizing to everyone about my website, and sorry it's not up. There have been some last-minute changes that have needed to be made, and so it has been delayed in being launched. So I apologize for those of you who went to it and it still was not in its full form, but it is coming, rest assured. The second thing I wanted to talk to you about was something I was reminded of this week. We actually went to Kona on the other side of the island this weekend for a little mini vacation, and I ran into a woman, a young lady in her family. The young lady's name is Leilani. She's 12 and a half years old, and I got to meet her and her mom, dad, and two adopted brothers. And what's unique about Leilani is that she, at 4 years old, she was actually in a car accident and became paralyzed from the neck down and actually uses a ventilator to breathe. And I was actually speaking to her mother. Her mother's name was June. And in speaking with her, I was really inspired by the inner strength that she had in the stories that she was telling me regarding her daughter's experiences and helping her daughter fully live her life, even as even with her physical body not being able to move on her own. So when I was talking to her mother, June, I was just struck by the inner strength of her mind and heart, because she was telling me stories of having to fight with the local school board, medical providers, neighborhood engineers, and her stories talked about her, highlighted her strength, but at times there were times when her strength were quiet and she taught with a gentle hand, and then there were times when she actually had to stand up and make a little more noise to get people's attention in order for things to change. And more than that, what I realized was that all that she did for her daughter, the strength that she had to do all of this, was stemming from her love for her daughter. And the strength that it took to go through all that and to continue to live life and fight for her daughter to be able to live fully never came from a place that was rooted in her ego, looking for vengeance, or proving other people wrong. It really was from a place of love. And I believe that when our strength comes from that place of love, it is this strength within you that you possess that will actually move mountains, teach thousands, and touch hearts to make a difference. The affirmation for today is, I have the energy and passion to make my thoughts reality. My thoughts are under my control. I have the energy and passion to make my thoughts reality. My thoughts are under my control. And now we're going to shift gears, and we're going to join our guest, Dr. Clint Perriman. Dr. Clint is a pioneer and founder of the new field of copenology. Copenology is an interdisciplinary field that studies scientific research related to how we succeed or fail to live up to our potential. He founded this new science after spending more than 31 years observing and studying how the U.S. Marine Corps develops the most mentally tough men and women on the planet. As America's leading copenologist and mental toughness authority, Dr. Clint speaks to groups large and small about how to use your brain to achieve more success, and today he'll be talking with us about copenology, mental toughness, and his new book, The Gift, 12 Ingredients to Improve Your Life, which was based on a 300-page letter he wrote to his daughter. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Clint. I really appreciate your time and your knowledge and sharing with our listeners.
Thank you, Pauline. I appreciate that. And I must say something. In case the listeners are listening to this, well, they'll all be listening to this in a recorded version at some point. If they have not voted for you on the Oprah Show, now you might have already talked about this, but if they haven't went to your website and voted for Pauline, you guys need to do that. I have now coined Pauline as my favorite motivational and inspirational and excuse killer of a woman on the planet.
Thank you. I had no idea you did your research on me.
Well, of course. I want to know who I'm coming on the air with. And I love what you're doing, and I think you should have that Oprah Show, because I can't think of a better person that can inspire people to live up to their potential and get rid of excuses than
yes.
you. And I put that, I sent that out on my distribution list last night.
Wow. Thank you so much. I have goosebumps all over. I'm so moved and touched. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate that. Oh, gosh. Okay. So let's talk more about you now that you have me all flustered about me. So you founded Copenology, and you call it the new science of success. For those of us that aren't familiar with it, can you tell us more about that?
Of course. I'll give you the real short version, because I get to talking about it. And I could take the whole show just answering that one question, because I just
excited
about it. You know, back in the early 80s, scientists from the National Institutes of Health, various colleges, universities, actually brain scientists from all over the country lobbied Congress for money to do research in brain science. They believed that we were right on the verge of some really miraculous discoveries in how the brain worked. They started thinking this because computers started becoming more powerful and brain imaging equipment started becoming more powerful, and they were looking at this stuff going, wow, we're about to have some breakthroughs. We just need more money to do research. And Congress and the first President Bush approved this, and the first President Bush declared the decade of the 90s the decade of the brain. Now, very few people have ever heard of this.
Yeah.
When it is at the foundation of what is going on in the world today. When first President Bush declared the decade of the brain, declared the decade of the 90s the decade of the brain, he opened up the floodgates for brain science research. And around the end of the 90s, the beginning of the 2000, I was completing my doctorate work and started studying the papers and the research stuff that was coming out of that research. And as I read it, it was fascinating me that there was all types of information coming out of this research that related directly to how we live up to our potential. However, nobody was translating the brain science research, all these papers that were, and this research that was being published, nobody was translating it into human potential. And the reason was these scientists got the money to do the research on things like finding cures for Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, schizophrenia, mm-hmm. alcoholism. It was all the brain disorders, but in their research, they were discovering things that we can apply in everyday life to live up to our potential, but unless you understood, now here's the trick, unless you understood psychology, success science, had a little kind of research background, if you didn't understand that stuff, you could read their papers and their findings, and none of it would make sense. Well, because I understood success science, I just got this degree in psychology, I read it and it hit me like a brick slab. Wow, this relates to goal setting. Wow, this relates to having a vision. This relates to passion. And I put together a little company called Nacopin Research, and what our job was to research the research, looking for little bits of information that could be applied and that could be applied to daily, you know, in a daily application to help people live up to their potential. And as I found it, we would synthesize this information and simplify it, so that the average person could understand it. And I call it copanology.
Where does that term come from, copanology?
Cognitive Optimum Performance Enabling Neuroscience.
Wow. I'm glad I asked that question.
I know, and I forget to bring it up to people. Actually, I've kind of got away from it because it kind of makes it complicated, but it really isn't. It's simply the cognitive, meaning your brain, optimum performance enabling, meaning neuroscience that helps us perform at an optimum level that we can use, optimum performance enabling neuroscience.
Very cool. That is amazing. I love it when people coin their own terms. How did your experience in the U.S. Marine Corps contribute to finding this new science of success?
Oh, that was probably the root of why I did that had to do with the Marines. I had already spent maybe 20 years in the Marine Corps, and I had got out. I was in the reserves working on my doctorate degree. And then after I started reading this brain science research, I realized I need to find a way. When I came up with the idea of copanology, I thought I need to find a way to see if this is really, really works. Is this really what they do? In other words, when you look at the science of copanology, there are programs, processes, and different things that you would do that apply this brain science. It was in the Marine Corps, my observation of what we do in the Marines, that made me realize everything I talked about in copanology is exactly what the Marine Corps did with the people when the day we got off the bus. The day you got off the bus at boot camp, the Marine Corps began applying various copanology principles and practices. But until copanology came into being, there was no term for it. So copanology simply put a term and then related it to brain science, what the Marine Corps was doing. And in a nutshell, I figured that the Marine Corps, or I kind of discovered that the Marine Corps was using what I call mental toughness. The mental toughness paradigm was the most powerful thing the Marine Corps did to change people so that they became the person that could accomplish extraordinary things. Because, you know, most of us, we all have goals. Well, let me say it like this. We all have goals, whether they are written down or not. You are either working on your goals or you're working on someone else's goals. Now, if you have your own goals and they allude to something extraordinary in your life, in order to accomplish it, based on what I discovered through the Marine Corps and that research, you have to apply the mental toughness paradigm, which explains in three steps what causes us to fail or succeed at living up to our potential. So it was the Marine Corps that kind of developed the testing ground for copanology.
So what would you say is the starting point for all that success?
That's a great question. And that's probably at the root of what everybody wants to know. Where do I start? And then, well, how much time do we have first, I should ask?
We have about 30 more minutes. And so, yeah, I want to be able to have you answer that question and also talk a little bit about your book and ask you some questions about your book and let people know where they can learn more about that. Maybe you could think about that question and we'll go to a quick break while you think about the question, what would you say is the starting point for all success? And we'll be right back with your answer.
I know exactly what it is. So we can take the break and I'll come back and share it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Does this show resonate with you? Do you have a message you'd like to share on this show? Would you like to be featured on this radio show as a sponsor? If so, contact Pauline directly through her website at www.paulinevictoria.com. And now, back to the show, Commitment to Courage with Pauline Victoria.
Great. Welcome back to the show. For those of you who are just tuning in, we are here with Dr. Clint Pearman, the pioneer and founder of Copenology, the interdisciplinary field that studies scientific research related to how we succeed and fail to live up to our potential. To learn more about Dr. Clint, you can go to his website at clintpearman.com. That's Clint Pearman, spelled P-E-A-R-M-A-N.com. And before we went to the break, I had asked Dr. Clint, what is the starting point for all success? And now I'm hanging out at the edge of my chair to find out.
Okay. Now, here's the interesting thing about this. It's not much different than what we've already been taught. However, my angle, I'm going to throw the science on it, the brain science. And here's what we need to know from the start. Our brain is at the foundation of everything we do. Our brain plays a role in every single thing that goes on with us. And until we learn how to reprogram the way our brain is wired, we're not going to accomplish anything significant in our life. And I like to tell people this. We're talking about you have to change the way your brain is wired. Now, got to keep this in mind. If you didn't need to change, people wouldn't be asking what's the starting point for success because they would already be achieving it. The reason we ask that is because we haven't come to figure out or we haven't found how do we actually make that change. And here it is. Understanding when I say our brain, I'm referring to how our neurons, how our neural networks are wired together. We know today from neuroscience research that the way the neurons in our brain are connected, we call those neural networks, the way those neural networks are connected determine everything that's going to happen with us, whether we're going to become a doctor, whether we're going to become a plumber, whether we are going to achieve our goals, whether we're going to do anything, whether we have fear or confidence all comes down to looking at how are your neural networks wired. Now, knowing that, the question is, well, how do I rewire my neural network so that I can become the person that can achieve whatever it is I want to achieve? So whatever you want to achieve, you want to understand first. Now, this comes out of basic success science, that you have to become the person that can achieve your goals. But nobody up until now has told us, how do I become that person? Here it is. You become that person by changing the way your brain is wired. And there are what I call the, I like to call this the mental toughness paradigm. And it begins with understanding three things. One, we have to reprogram our brain. Two, we have to recondition our biology, biochemical conditioning. And three, we have to change our behavior. Actually, the simple term is behavioral automation. So one, reprogram your brain. Two, recondition your biochemical functions in your body, and three, automate your behavior. And how you do that is with a vision first. I know we took the long way, but the first answer to the question of how do you, what's the starting point for all success, it begins with vision.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing in advance, and not only knowing, but having a clear picture, understanding of what you want to achieve. Now, why that's important, there's four things I'm going to touch on, but why the vision is so important is without the vision, we know you don't have the mental wiring. Think about that. In other words, in order to have a vision in your mind, you have to have already had the neural networks connected in your brain that represent that vision. Well, when people say, well, I want to write a book, or they say, I want to be on the Oprah show, and I have this idea. Here's a great example. When all those people that have registered and yourself that want to be on the Oprah show, here's how you get your brain to help you. Your brain has to know clearly what it is you're trying to accomplish, because if it doesn't, here's what's going to happen. You're going to shut off a part of the brain called the reticular activator. The reticular activator is it's an actual physical structure in your brain that filters information coming in through your senses. Our senses have the ability to actually process, well, not really process, but intake 1 billion bits of information a second. Now, get this. Our brain, scientists have figured out that our brain, through our senses, can take in about, and actually through our eyes and sound, 1 billion bits of information, but we can't process that much information. If we tried to consciously process 1 billion bits of information,
mm-hmm.
it would be like this. Here's a great example. I just read this the other day. It would be like being a general of an army with 100,000 members in your army, and each one of those 100,000 members, let's say this is a Marine unit, a Marine division, each one of them talking to the general all at once about what they need.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way he can understand or process what everybody is saying. So what the reticular activator does is filter out all the stuff that is not important. And it only makes you aware of what it deems important. The reticular activator is, it gets imprinted with your goals, beginning with your vision. So when you get a clear picture of what you want, you literally develop a set of neural networks, neurons that have connected, that connect to your reticular activator that say, it literally says, if anything comes my way that relates to this, make me aware of it. So in the case of the Oprah show people,
mm-hmm.
if that vision is clear, even in their peripheral vision or even in the outskirts of their audio perception, you will hear things and see things because your brain is making you aware of it that can help you win that show. But if you don't have a clear vision, things will literally come right in front of you. And I do several demonstrations if we were live or in person where I can demonstrate how your brain can see things right in front of it, but you do not become aware of it simply because it's not imprinted on your reticular activator. So the first thing is get a clear vision. The second thing is what I like to say is make a conscious decision. So you have a vision of what you want. I want to win the Oprah show. The second thing is, did you literally make a cognitive conscious decision? Now, that's different than a normal decision. A cognitive decision is where you actually sit down and spend time contemplating, thinking about it, lamenting over it, coming up with all, or getting out of the way all the challenges that this might present, all the fears you might have. And the reason you do that is it tells your brain, hey, I'm serious about this. Because think about this. We make decisions, or we think we're making decisions all day long about things we want to do, and your brain doesn't even take it serious. Especially mm-hmm. January or December 31st, millions of people decided they wanted to do various things, but their brain never took it serious because, just like everything else that we thought we were planning, we were really just making a wishful thought. So the second step in the key to success is to make a cognitive, conscious decision, spending time. And at the end of your decision, here is the answer. Most people will say, yes, I'm going to do the best I can. Now, that sounds normal, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to do the best I can to achieve this goal. Well, unfortunately, if your goal is big enough, the best you can might not be good enough. So at the end of making your decision, you have to end with what I like to say, the decision that goes beyond doing the best you can. And what is that? That's doing whatever it takes. Now I got to add for those that, well, let me just say, doing whatever it takes as long as it's legal, legitimate, and honest. Sometimes you got to throw that in there because there's too many examples of people that did whatever it took and it wound up being illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So
for that,
step two, right, step two is to do not the best you can, but get into, you want to program your brain to think that I'm not going to do the best I can because if the best I could do was good enough, I'd already have accomplished what I'm trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I need to do better, and what is better than the best I can is the mindset that says I will do whatever it takes, and that comes in that the second step, which is make the decision. Then the third one is install beliefs. Now, picture what we've done. We've got a clear vision of what we want to accomplish. That began growing or developing what we call brain plasticity, meaning neurons in your brain have now connected together that represent this new vision of what you want to accomplish. You made a decision which strengthened that connection, but we still need to make sure you believe you can achieve it, and I call that installing beliefs. And many people, we hear it all the time. You got to believe you can do this. You got to believe this. But has anyone ever told us, how do I actually develop belief if I don't already have it? That's an interesting question. Well, we can do that. Belief, we know that belief at the neuronal level is a set of neurons that have connected together that represent that belief. If you don't have those neurons connected, you don't have the belief. So if I were to take, and let's say I have a lot of coaching clients that say they want to lose weight. You know, they might be 60 pounds overweight, and they say, well, yeah, I believe I can lose weight. Well, if I had access to an MRI, where I, or an fMRI, where I could put them into a brain scanning, a brain imaging piece of equipment, I could image their brain and then determine whether they have the neural network that says they believe they can do this. Because if they don't, your brain's not going to work with you. It's going to literally work against you. So would
you say, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of, I mean, copenology seems to be the scientific perspective of what most people would say is the law of attraction. Is there any relation there?
Let me add this. I'm glad you brought that up. I am a law of attraction, the secret. I am a follower. I believe in it. However, here's the challenge. Here's what I add. The law of attraction and the secret that came out of it is only one component to success. If you read the law of attraction and only apply that, your chances of accomplishing your goals are slim to none. And even the guys that produce the law of attraction now are recouping what they said to add, it's not the only thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but the law of attraction is part of what we're doing in copenology, because here's what the law of attraction does. It simply makes your brain aware of what you want to accomplish. In other words, just the law of attraction says that if you put your thoughts on something hard enough, you will attract it to you. Well, that's not all that's going to happen. You just can't sit here and think about it, and all of a sudden, you can't sit here and think about $1 million, and all of a sudden $1 million is going to flop on your lap. No, but here's what the law of attraction does. The law of when you apply the science of the law of attraction, it acts to change the neural networks in your brain. So it is actually part of the process of installing beliefs. When you apply the law of attraction, where you think about what it is you want to accomplish, you strengthen the neural networks that develop that belief. And by strengthening the neural network, you change your attitude. There it is. The law of attraction simply remodifies you at the neuronal molecular level. It modifies your attitude so that you are now, so that you at least have the attitude of a person that can become a millionaire. Mm-hmm. And say that was your goal. My goal is to become a millionaire. You applied the law of attraction. You started thinking about money and being a millionaire. Well, that's going to change your attitude, and it's going to open up your reticular activator so that it becomes aware of anything and everything that could assist you in becoming this millionaire. But you must realize it's not the end of the story.
Okay, so if someone doesn't have those, I can't remember the technical term you use, but where the belief systems are found, if they're not there already, can they be developed?
That's what we're talking about, yes.
Those
four things, and I'm just going to run through them real fast because I left out the fourth one, but four things are all about developing the belief, well, not only the belief, but it's designed to do specifically one thing. Develop the neural network, because everything is all about how is your brain wired. In other words, if your brain is wired for success, you can accomplish anything you want. Now, how do we wire our brains? Begins with developing the vision. Then, or making a cognitive decision, going through that process. The third thing, installing your beliefs. And that's where we left off, installing your beliefs. All of that is slowly developing a set of neurons in your brain that connect together. And then the fourth thing puts it on jet fuel. This is where you take your beliefs and the vision that you developed and that decision you made, and you pour gasoline on it, and that is what I say, activate passion. And you've already heard people say you have to be passionate about your goals. But what if you're not? How do you develop passion? Well, let me tell you what passion is. Passion is a hormone and a neurotransmitter. Passion are chemicals in your brain that causes you to be excited and not want to quit and literally do whatever it takes. Now, how do you turn on or activate that passion switch? Well, one thing is the law of attraction will activate it. Thinking about what you want, spending time talking about what you want. Also, here are three things. One, you need to write your goals down. Two, you need to associate with positive people that you can talk to about your goals. Three, join a coaching group because that helps you to stay focused. And four, a mastermind program. And what all of that is designed to do is to keep whatever that vision is at the tip of your thoughts, because the thing that you think about the most is what releases the passion. And understand, passion is simply, it's, if we were to go even more into detail, passion is dopamine. It's the release of dopamine that causes you to be so excited about something that you get addicted to it. And that's what you want. You want to get addicted to whatever it is that makes you feel good about your dreams and goals, because once you're addicted, we know at the neuronal level, a series of hormones and chemicals, or I should just say chemicals, are being released into your system, and one of the most powerful ones is dopamine. Dopamine gets you, literally will addict you to whatever it is you're pursuing. And one of the other ones, serotonin, will keep you from, well, actually, serotonin will then cause you to be committed to it. It won't make it easy for you to quit.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have a 4-year-old son, and it sounds like a lot of the stuff that you're talking about is to reprogram ourselves because we've been maybe the way we were brought up or the environment that we were exposed to didn't foster confidence or belief, certain belief systems. But if, you know, say I have a 4-year-old and I don't want to have him be reprogrammed, I have the opportunity to help him start fresh from the beginning, you know, what would you suggest I could do to help him be, you know, be successful?
Excellent question. Wow, this is even, that question is more powerful than anything you've already asked because it's at the root of what everybody really wants to know. And I actually wrote an article on this, several years ago. So here it is. The first thing when you ask, what is it that I do or should do to give my child the best opportunity to be as successful as he can be? That's what we want. We want our children to be as successful. Well, we want to program them with the potential to be as successful as they can rather than program them for failure. That's the question, right?
Right.
And here it is. Understand this. In the back of your mind, you want to always be thinking, whenever you're doing things with your child, you want to be thinking, is this developing his self-esteem or breaking his self-esteem down? Because at the end of the day, if you can get your child to the 12th grade still believing, and I'm going to break this down, still believing that he or she can do anything he wants to do, you've done your job. The problem is children get to the 9th grade and they lose that imagination that they had way back in the 6th grade that said, you know, remember when kids are in the 6th grade, they want to do all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
I love the story about Miriam Jones. Miriam Jones is the Olympic track star that got in trouble for using steroids. You might remember that.
Mm-hmm.
She did whatever it took, but she left out the legal, legitimate, honest. When Miriam, and this is a good example, when Miriam was in the 6th grade, her teacher asked her, you know how your teachers ask you in the 6th grade, what is it you want to do or be when you grow up? Miriam mm-hmm. Jones wrote down in the 6th grade, I want to be an Olympic track star and the fastest woman in the world. What are you kidding me? How could she possibly know that's what she wanted to do in the 6th grade? Well, here's the ironic part of that. To the year she said she wrote down on that letter, to the year she wrote it down saying she was going to achieve this, she became the fastest woman in the world and an Olympic track star, but here's the best part of the story. Her teacher told her when she did that, she turned it in, her teacher came back to her and said, Miriam, don't you think, I got to add a piece, her teacher wrote this down. So this is written down on the note or the letter she wrote, the paper she wrote, the teacher wrote on it, Miriam, don't you think you should have more realistic goals like being a teacher or a nurse? And Miriam wrote back on the note, no, I'm going to be the fastest woman in the world and an Olympic track star, and if you don't want to support me, don't talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that note is in her book. You can read it. It. Like when I was reading it, I thought, wow, this is hard to believe until you see the actual note. So what was that telling us? Her teacher was programming her to not live up to her potential. The teacher should have simply said, Miriam, I think that's a fantastic goal, and let's figure out what we need to do to help you do that. The problem is nobody can believe, it's hard to believe that you can be 6 years old and then think 10 years from now you're going to be the fastest woman in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do with your children as you're doing and making decisions about them, at the back of your thoughts are always, what is it that I need to do to make sure that their imagination, that their self-esteem, that their dream, that they believe they can accomplish it? Now, whether or not they want to is a different question. The question is, they still believe they could. So let's say your child at 4, 5, 6 years old says, Mommy, I want to be an astrophysicist. You say, fantastic. Let's see what we can do. But then they get to the 12th grade and they decide, nah, you know, I don't want to be no astrophysicist. You want to ask, well, do you think you could? Well, yeah, I could if I wanted to. You did your job. But what happens to most kids, their self-esteem gets broken down so severely, and our teachers are doing it. That was one example. And I actually had a friend who was a teacher that did stuff. I could not believe this person. They told me that they did not believe that she was a third grade teacher. She told me she did not believe that children in the third grade could become anything they wanted to become. She said, isn't that unrealistic to set them up to believe they could become anything they wanted to become? And I had to spend hours, I like to call that to give her a motivational discussion, because I felt she was simply killing children's dreams and motivation because of her belief that they couldn't. How do you know what a third grader can become? And today we have the best example. I guarantee you in the third grade nobody thought Barack Obama would be the president and the leader of the free world.
Right.
So
right.
What happens, our children, their self-esteem, here's what's actually going on. From birth up until around 13, our child's brain is like a sponge. It is absorbing every single thing it's exposed to, and it is not determining whether it can believe it or not, or whether it's true or not. Up until about 13, that part of the brain, the part of the brain that allows us to make decisions as to whether something is true or not, in a child, it's not developed. So the child believes whatever it hears, sees, or observes. Then at 13, it's the brain structure that allows the child to use more rational thinking is starting to form. And at that age, depending on what you're telling them as a parent, they will start believing whether their dreams and goals are believable or not. And then by the time they get to the ninth grade, their self-esteem has already been set in place. Now, you can change it, but it's easier to get them there with a self-esteem that has them thinking, I can do anything I want to do. Now, I might not want to be a doctor, lawyer, brain scientist, but if I did want to, I could.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get them there with that self-esteem, see, because you can't make them become anything. You can only give them the potential to become anything, and that lies at the root, or self-esteem is at the root of that. Meaning they're in high school, and they believe, whatever I feel like doing, I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the secret.
And I think that takes a lot of pressure off parents too, because success doesn't have to look a certain way. It's just giving them the belief system that they can achieve whatever it is they put their mind to. So I think that helps with parenting too. It takes a little pressure off. It doesn't mean they have to go to college. It doesn't mean they have to have a certain, you know, income to be considered successful. It's just their inherent belief system. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
We're going to go back to another break, and when we come back, I want to talk about your book, The Gift, 12 Ingredients to Improve Your Life. So once we come back, we'll talk about that. Please, hold on.
Does this show resonate with you? Do you have a message you'd like to share on this show? Would you like to be featured on this radio show as a sponsor? If so, contact Pauline directly through her website at www.paulinevictoria.com. And now, back to the show, Commitment to Courage with Pauline Victoria.
Welcome back. We are here with an amazing guest. His name is Clint Pearman. You can find more about him at clintpearman.com. And when we left for the break, I mentioned his book called The Gift, 12 Ingredients to Improve Your Life. And this book was actually began as a letter to his daughter to help her get her life back on track after dropping out of college her junior year to have a baby. And after 30 days of writing this letter, it grew to 300 pages. And it covers 12 very important ingredients to success that no one taught us as we grew up. And so I wanted to ask Dr. Clint more about that book. And I know we only have about 10 more minutes before we go. So I know there's a lot that goes into this book and a lot that people can get from this book. So we're going to ask just a couple questions, but I would highly recommend that people do get this book. And again, you can find that at clintperriman.com.
So Clint, can I ask you, Pauline?
Yes, of course.
At your site, I don't think the link went up. The Amazon link for the book at your, you know, on the Blog Talk site where you can list the book. So if anyone is there, the book that's showing there is not The Gift.
Right. No. This show is for July 12th, and so it will be up there, and we will get it up for people so that they can get that, because I think it's a very important book for us to read. And I wanted to ask you, because there are so many self-help books available, what makes this book, The Gift, so special?
Excellent question. Well, you know, let me say this. I've read probably all the top 100 self-help books on the planet, and there are some great stuff out there. So the question is, why is The Gift so special? Well, I think there's two reasons. One, I compile in The Gift 12 individual books in one. So you're essentially getting the Reader's Digest version of what could be 12 different books. In other words, when you look at the 12, actually it should be 11, the 12th ingredient is actually other resources that send you to other books. So the first 11 chapters in the book are actually books on their own that you could I mean, you know, self-improvement. You can find thousands of books on self-improvement, personal development tips, stress management, the law of attraction, how to stop procrastination, building self-esteem, focus, motivation, and goal setting. You know, there are books written on those, and what I attempted to do was to take those topics and put them in 10 to 15 pages so that you didn't have to spend half a year reading the entire book. And what it does is this. When you get The Gift, I don't tell people to read the whole book. I tell people, open up the content and look at the ingredients or the contents. We actually call the contents ingredients,
mm-hmm.
12 ingredients. And look at each one of them, and whichever title captures your attention, that's the one you probably need. For example, mm-hmm. if you look at it and you see how to stop procrastinating, that's probably an indication you need to figure that out. Well, read that one. And that's what people have told me. They said, I got the book, and when I thought I was going to start reading it from the beginning, but I looked at the chapters or the ingredients, and the first thing that caught my attention was how to build self-esteem. And that's what I read. And that just changed my whole perspective just by reading that one chapter.
So each chapter can be standalone.
They are. Each chapter is a standalone chapter, and it was designed. Remember, I had my daughter. Here's what I was thinking, that what is it I can do to get my daughter back on track? And the first thought I had was, well, she probably needs motivation. So I started writing about motivation, you know, the crash course on how, not only about motivation, but literally what do I do to get motivated? And then after about 20 pages, I realized, I need to now talk about goal setting. Because even if you're motivated, you don't know how to set goals, it's not going to help you. So I then wrote about goal setting. Then after that, I thought, well, what if her self-esteem's been lowered a little because of having to drop out of school? Let me write about self-esteem. Then I wrote about self-esteem. Then I started realizing some of the science behind success, and I thought, wow, a lot of people fail to live up to their potential because they are just stressed the heck out living in the 21st century. So then I wrote about stress management, and then breaking bad habits, how to stop procrastinating, personal. You know, I went through that whole process. At the end of the month, it was over 300 pages. A friend of mine said, you need to turn this into a book. And there's a whole story behind that, but I hired an editor. They cut it down to 273 pages, changed the chapters to ingredients, and we called it The Gift. And it was literally set up to be a gift. So it's not even marketed to people individually. It's marketed as a gift. If you know somebody that you love and you want to give them a gift, because what do we give? We give ties, pies, and shoes. What better gift can you give somebody than the gift of a better life?
Mm-hmm. So how did your daughter, read that before it was published,
yeah.
And how did she react?
My goal was to kind of surprise her with it. So I actually, there are two books that were written. The original book is called The Gift. But if you look at Amazon.com, if you were to search for The Gift, you would find a blue book. That was the original unedited version. She read that version and said, "Dad, you got to redo it. It's got all kind of typos and grammatical errors." And I'm thinking, well, it was just a letter. But when the editor and the publisher realized we need to make it public, that's when we re-edited it. She read the original version and said she loved it. I gave the edited version to her daughter, who was 7, and this says something else. She was 26, and she read it and loved it and said she was applying those principles, but her 7-year-old daughter was able to read it also. So I wrote it so that a ninth grader, I mean, heck, the 7-year-old read it and was calling me up wanting to ask questions about it. I thought, wow, this is great.
You waived the fee for your granddaughter.
I did. Yes.
Oh,
that's
so good.
Background from The Gift.
Wow. And so you shared with us a little bit about what those 12 ingredients were. And it sounded like there was stress management, procrastination, losing weight. Is that in there?
Yes. I don't talk specifically about losing weight, but let's picture this. All those topics are important to somebody that's trying to lose weight, because if you're trying to lose weight and you don't know about goal setting, you have a problem. If you're not motivated, you have another problem. But here's an even bigger one. If you don't know how to focus on your goals, you got even worse problems. But here's the best one of them all. And I just did another article on that. You can find it at my blog on, I think I called it, How Stress is Making Us Fat, Dumb, and Stupid. And that article talks about, literally, I bring up the science behind how stress makes us fat, how stress not only makes us fat, but kills brain cells in the hippocampus that's responsible for memory and learning, so it adds to making us stupid, and stress wears out your immune system, which now makes us sick. So when you look at the book here and you talk about weight loss, every one of those topics in there play a role in weight loss.
And so you can actually apply that to almost, you can apply that to every part of your life.
Part. Absolutely. In fact, it doesn't matter what you are trying to accomplish. I guarantee people, when you open up the contents, something in there unconsciously is going to direct you to the ingredient that you need most. Because we all know, either consciously or unconsciously, what we need. And if you look at it and you say, wow, I need to go read this on motivation, you know you haven't been motivated. Or if you read it and you realize, and these are all stories people have called and told me. I opened it up and the first thing that caught my attention was self-esteem. I know I need to work on building my self-esteem. Or actually my niece called me and said, you know what, I always wanted to know what the law of attraction was. And I read what was in your book, and now I understand totally what it is in the condensed version.
Wow. This interview has been filled with so much information that's practical, and I would highly encourage everybody who's listening to this interview to go to clintperriman.com. He obviously knows his stuff. You've done a lot of research. You have a lot of life experience to back this up. Do you have any final thoughts before we close the interview?
I would simply say this. You know, in the 21st century, and for that matter, for the last 1,000 years, most people have not lived up to their God-given talent, potential, and desire. Most people are living far below our potential. And the sad part is we all can move 2 to 5 times closer or be 2 to 5 times better than we are. And in order to do that, we only need to start by determining what is it that we want to accomplish, make a decision to accomplish it, install the beliefs, and then develop the passion, and then chase it until you get it.
Wow. That's amazing. Thank you so much. I'm definitely motivated. And I just want to say thank you for everything you've done. Again, for those of you who are listening, please visit ClintPearman.com. And if you want to find out more information on me, you can come to PaulineVictoria.com. Until then, we are here on Commitment to Courage every single Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific and 4 p.m. Eastern. Thank you so much, Dr. Clint, and I will speak with you very soon.
The pleasure was mine. Have a fantastic day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Commitment to Courage. To learn more about Pauline Victoria, visit www.paulinevictoria.com and sign up to receive free updates. Be sure to tune in every Monday at 10 a.m. Hawaii Standard Time, 1 p.m. Pacific, and 4 p.m. Eastern. And remember, as you continue to live your life, and as you listen in each Monday, know that you always have the courage within you to live a life of victory.